From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Empire actor Jussie Smollett was charged last week in connection with what police say was an elaborate hoax. Smollett is accused of paying two men to beat him, tie a noose around his neck, and yell racist and homophobic slurs. Here is Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson at a press conference after Smollett was charged.
Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations? How could someone look at the hatred and suffering associated with that symbol and see an opportunity to manipulate that symbol to further his own public profile?
Johnson and others raised concerns about the effect that case could have on reporting actual hate crimes. Georgia is one of five states that does not have a hate crimes law, although legislation for such a bill was proposed last week. Megan Hansen authored a similar bill last year when she was a Republican state representative from Brookhaven, and she's joining us in the studio. Hello, Megan.
Hello, Virginia.
Well, thank you for being here. And with us on the line from New York City is Rachel Glickhouse. She coordinates national and local investigative reporting of hate crimes and hate groups for ProPublica's Documenting Hate Project. Rachel, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Rachel, briefly, how is hate crime defined?
So the FBI defines it under the federal law as a criminal offense against a person or property motivated in whole or in part by an offender's bias. So that bias could be against race, religion, sexual orientation, ethnicity. But essentially, it is a crime that was motivated partially or totally by that person's prejudice against the victim.
Well, media attention, of course, is focusing on the Smollett case for false accusations, but ProPublica started this Documenting Hate project to get a more accurate count of actual hate crimes. How many are committed in the U.S. each year?
So in 2017, the most recent year that data is available, there were some 7,000 that the FBI reported. However, that data is lacking because police don't have to send their data to the FBI. Around close to 90% of police departments that did send data said they had zero hate crimes. There's another federal agency that does a survey that shows that the number of hate crime victims could be up to 250,000 a year. So there's a huge difference in those numbers. And a lot of the problem is around counting that number by police, in addition to the problem that more than 50% of victims don't actually report crimes to police.
Well, we definitely want to dig into that. But how about in Georgia? Any data or numbers specifically in the state of Georgia?
So in 2017, more than 500 agencies participated, meaning they sent something to the FBI, but only 8 agencies submitted actual incidents. And the total number of incidents that were reported from the state of Georgia was 27, which seems pretty low, considering the grand scheme of things. So that was the most recent one.
Megan, last week, State Representative Chuck Evstration of Dakula introduced legislation that would create sentencing guidelines, quote, for anyone convicted of targeting a victim based on race, color, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, gender, mental or physical disability. What would that legislation accomplish?
Well, that is specifically for misdemeanors, and it would, if convicted by the jury, would add an additional 3 to 12 months, depending on the crime. Which, in my opinion, is a great first step. It speaks volumes to juries or judges seeing the importance of punishing hate crimes.
Now, you were among legislators to introduce similar bills last year. How does this current proposal differ?
Right. So I introduced a bill that covered misdemeanors. It covered felonies. It actually extended to civil issues, but it also provided for training and for recording, which was one of the reasons why I believe that I had such strong support from law enforcement, because that's something that, as Rachel mentioned, they're really looking for is some direction as to what is a hate crime, and they need something on the books to be able to determine what it is, to then report it, and then keep accurate numbers.
So that bill never made it out of committee. Why do you think it failed ultimately?
There were Probably a lot of reasons. There were two bills, actually, that were pretty similar, and they both got hearings, and they never actually came for a vote. And so I actually think that if there had been a vote taken, it would have come out of subcommittee and then moved on to the next committee for a full committee hearing. But for a number of reasons, I could suspect, but won't. it didn't happen this year. But I think, you know, the fact that there's another Republican who is the chairman of his committee, which is the committee that it was before last year, which is a different chairman from last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is a great show of a first step and the ability for this year's bill to move.
Well, let's talk about some of the opposition. Rachel, one of the arguments against hate crime legislation centers on free speech. And in the U.S., hate speech is legal, different from, say, in Britain, for example, where such speech is illegal. How do you respond to the argument that hate crime legislation erodes First Amendment rights?
Well, that's not what it's intended to do, right? It is intended to target crime, actual crime, and to therefore increase penalties for people who commit those crimes. So it defines the definition of the actual adding of the bias motivated part is that the police and investigators must prove that the person was acting out of prejudice, out of bias against the victim, and that is specifically why they committed the crime.
What are some of the ways that local law enforcement can prove that? I mean, you're talking about intent, right?
Right, exactly.
Megan's nodding here. Do you want to pick that up?
Sure, yes. I mean, there are a number of crimes that I looked into when I was studying this bill before dropping it, where, for example, the perpetrator had, you know, yelled racial slurs or epithets, and, you know, they had spray painted various and sundry, you know, a swastika, for mm-hmm. example, on a synagogue. Usually, and then also police or just general law enforcement will tell you, they will tell them why they committed these crimes. I mean, they're it's unabashed about, you know, what their motivation was. And so all of these things can go towards the proof, the evidence needed to convict them of a hate crime if there's a statute on the books.
That's Megan Hansen. She's a former state rep who pursued legislation against hate crimes here in Georgia. Also with me, Rachel Glickhouse, project manager of ProPublica's Documenting Hate Project. Well, another argument is that hate crimes laws don't necessarily work or can actually hurt the people that they seek to protect, making them feel more like outsiders. What do you think here, Rachel or Megan, if you want to pick that up? Could it be more harmful than helpful to have a separate law that paints some people as the other, the protected?
I've never heard that one before. I would disagree with that. The purpose of hate crime laws is in order to specifically give a person justice for this very insidious type of crime and to have a little bit of symbolism in the criminal justice process that says, sends a message to the community and not just to the victim that says, this type of crime is not going to be tolerated, and it will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
Well, let me ask you then, why do you think more than 50% of the people who say that they were victimized do not file complaints?
So there's a lot of mistrust in some communities who already have a poor relationship with police, and they don't trust that if they go to the police, they will take their complaint seriously. Some victims are humiliated and don't want to relive the story over and over again. There are a variety of reasons, but some of them do boil down to relationships that these communities have with police and the trust they have to move those cases forward in the criminal justice system.
Well, ProPublica has investigated how law enforcement is trained to deal with these kind of hate crimes. What did you find?
So we found that it varies very widely all over the country, and it varies by state. Not every state has a statute on the books that requires police to get hate crimes training while they're in the academy. And sometimes police do get training, but it's very, very minimal, maybe half an hour or an hour in the total of their training. So it means that some police really have no knowledge of these types of laws or how to investigate and what the best practices are in terms of investigating these crimes and tracking them internally.
Well, Megan, you had broad support from law enforcement, including from former Georgia Bureau of Investigations Director Vernon Keenan. What did the GBI and local law enforcement agencies in Georgia tell you about why they supported this legislation?
They really liked the training and reporting aspects of it. I mean, it would lead to equal applicability or enforcement, rather. And that was something that was key to them to help them do their job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they thought it was important that we give them the tools that they needed to do their job so that the other communities that were being impacted felt safer. I mean, that's what they signed up for.
Well, we know that conservative media in particular and others have zeroed in on the Smollett false accusation and criticized how quickly Democrats, for example, were willing to jump onto this. But I'm wondering for you, you know, you were a Republican representative. Why was this legislation a priority for you?
To me, this is an issue of right and wrong. This is not something that should be politicized in any which way. You know, hate crimes, I think Rachel touched on it, are not only crimes against an individual, but they're crimes against a community. And anytime you have something like that, I mean, it goes beyond politics because that likely that community is of all different types of political beliefs and persuasions. So I think that that's just a whole other issue than, you know, what a hate crime is or, you know, should it be a law or this, that, or the other. It's just those two things don't collide with me.
Rachel, do you have any data on, of course, let's just enforce that Smollett is guilty and I'm innocent rather until proven guilty. And he says he is innocent. But do you have any idea of how many false reports are made?
So there's a researcher in California named Brian Levin, and the number he's been sharing recently is that he believes the number to be less than 1% of all reported hate crimes. And I think that is actually a smaller amount than the number of falsely reported sexual assaults. So It's sort of in that neighborhood.
Well, it does sound like a lot of people from state legislators to law enforcement, as we're hearing here, do not have a consistent understanding of hate crimes. Rachel, how, as somebody who's looked at this, do you think that that should be addressed?
Of how police look at hate crimes?
Yes, or understand, like, what is a better way to communicate to either the public or to state legislators who are considering this kind of thing, what kind of effect they have?
Sure. So I think it's important to look at cases that are successfully prosecuted, that have a full outcome to show what the law can actually do. These cases are difficult to prosecute because you have to prove intent. But I think looking at some cases where the police did an excellent job with the investigation and were able to bring it to trial and successfully prosecute it would be a first step to show how this actually can work in practice.
Rachel Glickhaus of ProPublica, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And Megan Hansen, she's a former state representative now serving as an attorney. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.